With permission of Bobby Sox, this episode is presented before a live studio audience.
Cue applause.
They say it's the most wonderful time of the year, but if you look around, it feels a lot more like the most high-stakes performance evaluation of the year. Are you adequately joyful? Have you maximized your family time? Is your credit card statement sufficiently festive?
Yeah, right. It's the season where peace on Earth is strictly enforced between the hours of 9 a.m. and 9 p.m., provided you've hit your Q4 spending quota. And if you dare to suggest that maybe, just maybe, you don't need a 6-foot-tall inflatable Santa on your front lawn, you are suddenly the Grinch, the un-American Grinch.
And let's not even start on the protagonist checklist. If you haven't moved to a small, aesthetically pleasing town in Vermont to save a struggling bakery with a handsome, recently widowed carpenter by December 24th, you have officially failed at being the lead character in your own life. Sorry, but the Hallmark algorithm has just judged you as a supporting character.
It's also manufactured, isn't it? Every time you turn on a commercial, scroll through social media, or even walk into a grocery store from about November 1st onward, you're being hit with this homogenized, impossibly perfect ideal of a holiday that barely exists outside of a focus group.
It's economic pressure disguised as tradition. It is media manipulation wrapped in a big red bow. And hey, look, we love a good peppermint mocha as much as the next guy. But the sheer pressure to perform happiness, generosity, and logistical miracles at this time of year is a societal construct that needs a serious timeout.
Exactly. We're not here to be Scrooges. We're here to say that your holiday doesn't have to look like the one they're selling on TV. If your house looks more like a reasonable adult lives there than a light-up wonderland, that's fine. If your gift is a handwritten card instead of the hot ticket item, you're still a good person.
Welcome back to Counterwave Radio. Niels Olson.
I'm Bobby Sa.
And I'm Bill Quaresimo.
Today, we are cutting through the tinsel. We're looking at why the holiday feels less like a genuinely joyful celebration and more like an economic and emotional deadline set by corporate interests. We're talking about the data behind the holiday hustle, the origin of the homogenized myth of the perfect Christmas, and we dug up some fascinating facts on how marketing departments basically invented the modern Santa Claus, and why it is totally okay, maybe even radical, if your holiday spirit looks a little more blue Christmas and a little less Jingle Bell Rock. We're going to empower you to take back your holiday.
We're unboxing the whole holiday apparatus, and this time we're not even pretending we kept the receipt.
So, Bobby, I know you've been doing some field research on the Hallmark Channel. What is the standard operating procedure for holiday happiness according to cable TV nowadays?
Oh, Niels, it's a strict formula. The files call it the homogenous myth, but I call it the flannel imperative. We start with this woman, big city woman, probably with good job, career, managing something, but she hates her whole life, even though her hair's perfect, her clothes are perfect, her watch probably costs more than a year of my rent. Everything's perfect, but she hates her life. So she gets sent to a small town, or she's like going home to visit family in a small rural town of Mistletoe Junction, Candy Cane Lane, something that just happens to be named after Christmas. And now she has to be around her family who think she's great and her life's perfect, but she hates her life and now she's stuck in rural land. And then we meet a guy, usually some flannel guy with a beard. That's why it's the flannel imperative. And he works with his hands. He's a carpenter, or he's like the tree cutter. And it alludes to Jesus maybe. But they have to team up together to save a building or a gazebo or a bridge from being demolished by the developers, because it's a historical thing, or Santa lived there or something. And then they fall in love.
Isn't that developer just trying to build affordable housing or something?
Stop applying logic. What happens is, man and woman fall in love, and then everything's saved, she gives up her whole life, and Christmas is perfect. And this creates this keeping up with the Joneses vibe for emotions. Like, we aren't just pressured to buy shit we don't need, we're pressured to perform this specific brand of small-town joy. If you aren't wearing a chunky knit sweater, drinking cocoa by the fire, are you American?
It's the commodification of nostalgia, really. We're chasing a memory of a holiday that never actually happened or existed. It's just an image in the media. But to sustain that perfect image, someone has to do the heavy lifting, right? Bill, this is where the rubber meets the road, or where the delivery van hits the snowbank anyway.
Yeah, that heavy lifting, every year, every holiday season, over and over again, falls to us. We call this the holiday hustle. We love to talk about the spirit of giving, but let's call it what it really is. The spirit of solvency for retailers. Let's start with the debt trap. We see massive spikes every year in consumer debt just to buy gifts that end up in a landfill in 3 years.
Damn right, because most of these things are designed to have a 3-year life cycle. It's mind-boggling the way this kind of consumerism works.
This is all so that the retailers can get their profits, their end-of-year profits up. And it's funny how those end-of-year profits increase every year. Year over year, it's always up, never down.
Mm-hmm. Which tells you one thing, really. Each year, we're exploited slightly more.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the goal of each
year. Or each year, we buy into it slightly more.
Either way, we're being had.
On top of the debt trap, we're hit with the labor crunch. While you and I and most of those we know are cozy at home in our chunky sweaters or flannel shirts, watching those Hallmark movies that Bobby talked about earlier, low-wage retail and delivery workers are out there pulling double, sometimes triple shifts in brutal conditions.
And I can speak to that because most of the beginning of my life, I was one of those low-wage retail workers that was out there. When you hit the holiday season, from about a week before Black Friday all the way through right around January 1st, the level of abuse that you take where you work from the people you work for skyrockets.
Absolutely.
And if you want to keep your job, you're putting up with it. And if not, oh well, it's going to be a shitty holiday for you.
Yeah, I was also going to speak on my history in retail with that. It's the weeks before Black Friday. If you're in a good retail environment and you like your coworkers, we're in a time where we all mentally brace ourselves and be like, all right, who's going to take shifts in the back if we need to not freak out? Because people do get mean. They get demanding. And, you know, you're already on your feet for 10, 12 hours, and now people are yelling at you about prices you don't control.
Mm-hmm. No, it speaks to the average American's ability to treat the employee at a retailer or at a fast food restaurant or any restaurant, really, as a fixture. The general accepted norm is that we treat people who work in these jobs as though they were a function of the company they worked for, not as though they were people.
Which also means we treat them as though they are beneath us, and they are not. If some of us had to do the jobs that those people do, we would crumble in a day. We would not last our first 8-hour shift. The reality is that the economy, at least the economy that's foisted upon us, relies upon us being stressed enough to impulse buy, but concurrently not stressed enough to stop working. And it is a delicate balance.
So that turkey tangled in the lights on the show art, that's basically an Amazon warehouse worker right now, I guess.
I mean, pretty much.
I think it starts with acceptance. We need to just normalize the idea that you can opt out of the madness.
Right. We see a spike in loneliness this time of year. The blue Christmas phenomenon that I sang about earlier. But there is power in chosen family.
And that doesn't have to mean a big gathering. It can mean simply ordering Chinese food and sitting in your pajamas, preferably flannel, and refusing to discuss politics with an uncle you see only once a year. We need to accept the idea that we don't need to pile $5,000 worth of gifts under a tree. We need to come together as friends, family, and enjoy the company of each other instead of the commercial bullshit, baubles, bangles, and beads that we're expected to buy every year.
Yeah. The most radical thing you can do this season is reject the forced happiness mandate. If you're sad, be sad. If you're happy, be happy. But do it on your terms, not because a calendar alert told you to. If you think about it, there's a lot of pressure that we all get placed on us this time of year, every year, to be this perfect picture of holiday season happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's just not real for most people. It's not the truth. It's an illusion. It's that emotional keeping up with the Joneses that Bobby was talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it can be triggering to people who already have a hard time during the holidays, that stress, that pressure to be happy. You feel like you're a burden if you talk about your sadness or any emotion that isn't happiness around the holidays. You feel like you're a burden to those around you because everything is saying everybody's happy.
Right.
And it exacerbates the loneliness, and it can be a really difficult time.
Yeah, it's the most joyful season, so what is wrong with you?
Whatever is going on in your personal headspace, try to remember that this forced happiness, this consumer-driven holiday, and even Santa Claus himself has been dumped upon us by marketing and advertising and media that are all geared to benefit the bottom line.
Yeah,
and
actually.
And it's not your bottom line they're looking at.
No.
And Bill, actually, you brought up one of my favorite tidbits that I tell people, and they don't like when I tell them this fact. Our modern version of Santa Claus that we know in the U.S., we can all thank Coca-Cola.
Yep.
Because that's not what St. Nicholas looked like.
Nope. Mm.
Coca-Cola gets a bad rap. They weren't alone in this. They were a part of it, but they were not alone.
Mm.
But there was a certain standardization of Santa Claus that went on in the early days of the golden era of American marketing. And it went on between a few companies. Coke was one of the big players, but not the only one, as Bill said. They rewrote Santa to be a homogenized normal myth that everybody could buy into for the holiday season. It didn't matter whether you were Christian, white, or Christian. You could believe in Santa Claus.
Just as De Beers rewrote the story of the diamond, American business rewrote the story of Christmas.
Absolutely.
Many, many ways.
Yep, and we dropped Krampus, and I think that's a bad thing. I think Krampus would be very beneficial in this country. I think Krampus for politicians. Krampus 2028.
I was going to say, on a serious note, we're also in a time in the U.S. where everything's expensive. The price of everything is skyrocketing. And now we're in the holidays where even just trying to have that meal with family can be difficult. So I think another thing to just focus on this year is like gifting yourself. I don't mean buying yourself things. I mean gifting yourself time alone, gifting yourself time to do things you like, gifting yourself rest. If you want to focus on it being a gift-giving season, take out the money part of the gifts.
Mm-hmm.
How about gifting yourself to those you love? Just be there for them. If they're not happy, don't put them down. Don't push them away. This is the time, more than any time, that you need to listen to what's hurting them, listen to what's going on in their lives.
Yeah.
Because there'll come a day, believe it or not, when you'll wish they were there to listen to you.
So the perfect holiday sold to us by the media is really this meticulously crafted commercial designed to increase Q4 profits and enforce an emotional quota. Your freedom this season lies in rejecting that script.
Here's the biggest thing. Let's remember, this myth is manufactured. The hallmark perfection of a quaint, small-town holiday is a homogenized, again, manufactured ideal that barely exists outside of a focus group. I mean, how many of us actually even live in a rural area anymore?
Let alone Candy Cane Junction. Come on.
Yeah.
The places that they portray in these movies are ridiculously idyllic to the point where they just can't exist.
Yeah, they're just fantasy movies at this point. It's a commodification of nostalgia trying to pressure you to chase memories that never existed in the first place.
Well, is it a fantasy movie or is it female training?
That
you should
well.
Give up your high-powered career, your $5,000 shoes, your $3,000 watch, and your good job. Because really, what you should be doing is taking care of Bob, the woodcutter.
It twists the idea of family. It twists what family is supposed to be about during the holidays.
It uses it against the viewer without them even realizing it.
Yeah. You're supposed to be spending time around your family if you want to. Again, that's a big if you want to. Because it brings you joy.
What about the gazebo?
I don't give a fuck about your gazebo, man. It's the middle of the winter. What are you doing with the gazebo?
Saving it from the developers.
And let's not lose sight of what we're talking about here. We're calling this the myth of the perfect Christmas.
And it is.
What is a myth? What
is
a myth?
Story.
A story.
It's a story that you tell to make yourself feel better about things.
Myths have definitely changed from what they first were, but it still, at its base, is a story. It's trying to paint this nice picture. You know, I think that's why I prefer Christmas movies like A Year Without a Santa Claus or Wacko's Wish.
Yeah. And don't ever lose sight of the fact that this myth was largely written by the same people you're throwing your money at every November and December.
Almost as if you were trained to spend.
It's an economic mandate. This massive pressure to be happy and generous and logistically perfect. It's an economic pressure disguised as a tradition, wrapped up in a happy myth. This holiday hustle relies on spiking consumer debt for gifts and overworking low-wage retail and delivery workers. The economy needs you stressed enough to impulse buy, but again, don't get so stressed that you stop working.
And another thing with this mandate of the holidays, it's an environmental toll that I don't think people talk about. We hit on the fact that a lot of these gifts end up in a landfill in 3 years.
But in one year, the amount of packaging leads
rushing things like fast fashion or trendy toys that are usually mostly plastic that the kid doesn't like.
Timu stocking stuffer.
Oh, God.
Timu stocking stuffers, yeah. And I think, Niels, I think I heard you mumble something about all the packaging that ends up in the landfill.
Yeah, I didn't want to cut Bobby off, but I just had to get something in there because between the packaging that gets thrown out and what is done to the packaging in the holiday season. So here we go, back to retail, okay? One of the things I experienced as a retailer in the holiday season was a shift in packaging. And it was because theft goes up around the holiday season. So suddenly, small packages become big ones. Tiny items are in huge boxes or blister packs that you need a razor blade or scissors to open. So suddenly we've got a lot more packaging, and then we take it home and we package it again. Mm-hmm. We wrap it, we bag it, we box it. We ribbon it, we bow it, we stick a tag on it. We put it under a tree. So the net environmental impact every year of this is daggering.
And we're not trying to say don't get people presents, but a lot of the world is struggling financially now. If you want to still buy people things, really take time and think about what they'll actually like and maybe use for a while or buy an experience, buy tickets to something, like something that'll last, you know, because it really is also, it's economic hell and it's environmental hell.
Excuse me one second. You mentioned blister pack, and needing a razor or scissors?
Yes.
Dude, I have encountered blister packs.
Where you need a chainsaw.
Thank you. That is exactly what I needed.
Sometimes things are childproof so well, I have to question if I'm an adult or not.
So do I, and I'm going to be 50.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, my thought in all of this is that the most critical action you can take to normalize the non-traditional holiday is accepting the non-traditional holiday. Reject the forced happiness mandate. If you're experiencing a blue Christmas, loneliness, sadness, acknowledge it. You're not alone. Hell, and none of us are.
And if seeing flannel and pine needles and wreaths everywhere makes you want to puke, decorate your house your own way. It doesn't have to be what the Hallmark movie says it has to look like. Make your holiday your own. So not only making your own traditions, but whether it's ordering Chinese food or spending time with chosen family, or simply just refusing to speak about politics or religion during the holiday, make it on your terms. Don't make it dictated by a calendar alert or a corporate commercial or Aunt Linda blowing up your phone.
Listen, here's the reality that we live in. Every goddamn month is a holiday season in some regard.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
We go from Halloween to Thanksgiving to Christmas to Valentine's Day to St. Patrick's Day to Independence Day.
Easter.
I'm sorry, I left out a big one, didn't I? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's because it keeps moving around. I never know where to plug it in. And guess what? For every one of those perpetual holidays, we're conditioned to buy something.
And
this
give it
one,
to someone
this
else.
Particular one, is the biggest one in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
But don't think you're slipping through Easter without buying some baskets and chocolates and Easter grass. And don't think you're slipping through Independence Day without buying some flags and banners. And they've got us coming and going, kids.
Yep. Yep.
They got us buying plastic things of things that exist, like fucking grass.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of making the holiday your own, I'm going to bring up this little tidbit that's, I guess, technically news, but it's fun. And a church made the holiday their own. I don't know if either of you saw. We may have to look up and find what church it was. But a church put out their nativity scene out on the lawn, like the big one, with everything except the baby Jesus was not there. Instead, there was a sign that said ICE was here.
Whoa.
St. Susanna Catholic Church. Wow. In Massachusetts. That of Massachusetts. Yeah.
So that's a way to make their holiday their own.
Yep. The Holy Family is missing. There's a sign that says ICE was here.
Dang. That's some marketing genius right there.
Yeah. Leave it to a church. Yeah.
One
of the things that I think about in the holiday season, too, is the music, right? Now, I love Christmas music. I don't love the Jesus-y songs. I'm going to go ahead and full disclosure, I'm not a Christian. Oh, hell no.
You got that kind
but
of
money. I do enjoy Christmas music, and I enjoy Christmas carols, and I enjoy the spirit of the season. I enjoy that whole Yuletide thing, but in a very secular way. But even the secular Christmas carols nowadays are either about forgiving somebody, loving somebody even though you shouldn't, or getting somebody something. Like, that's kind of it.
My opinions on holiday music are not liked by most. I have some holiday songs I like, usually the alternative songs written by bands that aren't the songs that everybody knows. And I have the unfortunate psych knowledge that Christmas music or holiday music has the possibility to just drive you a little bit insane, because almost every song is the same chord progression in different ways and the same sound.
Every time they thaw out the beast, the hair on the back of my neck stands up and I just fear for my soul. Because if that siren gets close enough, even if it's over the radio,
I hate
the next thing you know, I hate myself for being single.
I hate that now it's still October when she starts defrosting. That's
rude.
Right? I think I would rather hear Let It Go.
Blasphemy.
No, but there are some seriously good holiday songs. Like, Bill, don't you know that Thanksgiving song that nobody in the world knows?
Arlo Guthrie. What do you mean nobody in the
world knows Alice's Restaurant Massacre?
The Great Thanksgiving Day Massacre.
Nobody in the world knows. What generation are you from, youngin?
Millennial.
Oh my God. To this day, you sit in a diner on Thanksgiving long enough and you will hear that song.
I had never heard that song in my life until Bill introduced it to me. And I was like, the fuck you mean there's a Thanksgiving song?
Something else we mentioned earlier was the way the Christmas myth was built in a similar way as the diamond myth.
Mm-hmm.
When De
Beers... Diamonds are forever.
Diamonds are forever, yeah.
Every kiss begins with K.
When De Beers had the lion's share of the diamond mines, which they still do, and I wonder when they didn't at this point, they didn't necessarily have much of a market for all these damn things because industrial diamonds weren't a big thing yet at the time. But they were pretty little baubles, and it seemed there must be a way to market these to the average consumer. Before the 1930s, the diamond engagement ring was not a thing.
Diamonds weren't forever yet.
Diamonds were not forever. De Beers decided that they had to market all these pretty little stones they were pulling out of the ground, and they came up with the concept, diamonds are forever and they should be the fixture on your engagement ring. They came up with that almost 100 years ago, and it still sticks.
And the thing with diamonds is it's a whole cottage industry right there. It's a whole market. It's not just weddings and engagements anymore. Holiday gifts, absolutely. Valentine's gifts, absolutely.
Promise rings.
Yeah.
And mentioned this in our first episode about the holidays. I brought up the whole idea of cuffing season. So today we've talked about economic pressure and the pressure from the weird Hallmark picturesque thing that doesn't exist. But
flannel season.
But that also all intertwines into this irrational cuffing season. Like, you want to buy diamonds for the girl you're supposed to bring home during the holidays.
You will attract her with pretty stones.
Yeah, and it's also like this performance of... like, you're buying gifts for a partner that's kind of a performance in the first place to then make sure they open in front of your family so your family knows how good you are at courting.
Yeah, so it's performative on performative.
It also trivializes the female component of that whole dynamic.
Because apparently they can all be bought with rocks.
Oh, look at the pretty sparklies. I'm going to follow him.
Yep, Gronk by a good rock.
Yeah,
Gronk worked 3 months of break rock time. Gronk by big rock, shiny.
I mean, and you follow Gronk sparkly now. Too.
And the whole Christmas imperative to go out and spend, spend, spend was built by the same corporate myth writers that created A Diamond Is Forever.
Macy's and Coca-Cola.
So... have yourself a merry little Christmas.
And you know what? I'm gonna say it. Die Hard's a Christmas movie. So, Die Hard is a more realistic Christmas movie than anything on the Hallmark Channel.
Especially in this regime.
And Edward Scissorhands is a more romantic Christmas movie than anything on the Hallmark Channel.
Here's my thing. If you're not in debt, go out and spend your silly behind off. Who am I to judge? But...
spend it on
weed. And if you're not in debt, please introduce yourself. I'd love to shake your hand.
Maybe get married.
But on the other hand, if you're like the rest of us and you're already drowning in debt, why do you want to compound your own suffering?
So, we've unboxed the holiday. We've looked at the receipts. We've checked the return policy. And yeah, it's a little messy.
The... perfect season is really just a marketing gimmick designed to keep the fourth quarter economy afloat. But knowing that frees you up. Real life does not happen in a snow globe, and it definitely shouldn't happen on a credit card.
Exactly. If your holiday involves ordering takeout, ignoring the doorbell, and refusing to wear a matching sweater, that is so valid. You don't need a gazebo or a flannel-wearing carpenter to have a meaningful December.
So. The takeaway for this episode is simple. Reject the forced happiness mandate. If you're lonely, acknowledge it, because you aren't the only one. If you're stressed, say so. And if you find peace in the non-traditional, embrace it.
And seriously, tip your delivery drivers. They're the only things holding the holiday hustle together right now.
You've been listening to Counterwave Radio. Your guides were Niels Olson, Bobby Sox, and Bill Quaresimo.
Jesse made us sound smart in the studio.
And Skeeter helped with the research.
Now, before you go kickstart a new conversation, here's what's on deck for the next episode.
We're shifting gears from the stress of the season to the diversity of the season. Next episode, we're throwing a Freer America's holiday party.
We're talking Kwanzaa principles, Hanukkah history, solstice traditions, and yeah, we are breaking down the genius of Seinfeld's Festivus.
So, happy holidays. It's time for the airing of grievances. Finally, a holiday for the rest of us.
Stay free. We'll see you then.